Are you ready for your next winter adventure? Whether it's a stylish all-wheel drive SUV to get the family where they need to go, or an innovative EV to make the switch to electric, ChevyDriveChicago.com has you covered. With Equinox, Traverse, Silverado, Trax, and Trailblazer, you're sure to find the perfect Chevy to match your needs and lifestyle. But finding the right car is only part of the story. Winter weather is here, and your vehicle needs to be ready for anything. From oil changes and tire rotations to unexpected repairs, your local Chevy dealer is here to help. Their team of experts knows your vehicle, and they will make sure your car is safe, reliable, and ready to handle whatever the season brings. So why wait? Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today to find your local dealer, shop the latest vehicles, and schedule your service appointment. ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Patriots Friday on WEEI is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market and by FindMassMoney.gov. No matter where you work from these days,
take Jones and Keefe with you on the Odyssey app.
Favorite WEEI.
Specifically, when you look at the coaching staff, whether it's Gerard Mayo, Alex Van Pelt, how do you feel about this group moving forward, not just so much for the rest of this season, but building towards 2025 and beyond?
Yeah, definitely. I like this group. I've played with the group the whole year, coaches and players included. I think the coaches have done a good job. You know, obviously the results haven't shown that, but, you know, the later part of the season, or at least the last 8 to 10 games, I think we've been playing a little bit better each game. But obviously, if you don't win, it doesn't matter. But I think the coaches have what it takes to put us in positions to win and to dominate in games.
So I think what we're saying here is you like the culture and probably go strongest for it.
Yeah, that's very correct. You know, obviously, you know, everyone has their opinions on the outside, but really it doesn't matter. The guys inside the building, we're willing to work. We're ready to work. And that's what we're here to do, to work and win games.
It's Patriots Friday on WEEI. How you doing? It's KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keith. That was Mike and Wenyu on Patriots Thursday yesterday on this show talking about the culture strong. The players are all together. The noise is different on the outside than it is on the inside. And then Keon White surprises us with a little statement today, John.
Yeah, Keon White in a couple different places, too. Shout out to Karen Garigian of Mass Live. Also, Mike Giardi of Boston Sports Journal had some quotes. And they were not exactly the same quotes, but similar. And it's funny, because what he said to Mike Giardi, I actually really liked. He said, there's no such thing as a good loss. There's no consolation prizes. We get paid to win. I like those quotes a lot. That's the mentality I want Patriots players, I want athletes in general to have. And then you look at what he said to Karen Garigian, though, and he talks about, I'm going to try to get through these next two games, see where the cards may lie for the future. I'm trying to improve me, get on the same page as the coaches. So it seems like, you know, we talked to Onwenu yesterday, who understands that they're not doing well results-wise, but he likes the process and he likes the coaches there. Whereas Keon White, you have a much greater sense of frustration of, hey, we are not good enough, we are not playing or coaching well enough, and it doesn't really matter if we compete and lose a close game because we're not winning.
So we're talking about the same Keon White, if you remember, on draft night. Remember he had that look of, you couldn't tell if it was disappointment or, and then there was this look on his face. And some of us in the fan base were like, you know what, that's going to be the motivation. Like that's the Shook One music that's going to play behind him, and he's just going to absolutely dominate and then just absolutely turn heads and everything. And then it gets to, I'm going to see where we are the next couple of games. That's one of the worst things you can say towards the end of a bad season, to say, yeah, let's see what happens here after a couple of weeks. Like you never talk about the week before. You never talk about the end before the end. In fact, when the end comes...
It is something, though, their head coach has done multiple times this year.
Well, that's because I told you that Gerard Mayo was trolling the public.
No,
when he told
but
you
I think he also, like, they take their cue from... Because I agree with you, like, saying, like, oh, I'm just going to get through the next two games. Like, that doesn't sound good. And this is a guy, too, in Keon White...
Now, that's different than Gerard Mayo saying, I'll be a better coach in the second year. But those are two different things.
They're similar, though. And Keon White is a guy that... Five sacks this year, but four of them came in the first 2 weeks. So the production has gone down quite a bit, and he's still playing a lot. And I think he even says in the Karen Garigian story that he needs to be better against the run. I would agree with that. But the production, I don't think, has matched maybe some of our expectations, but also even some of his expectations. This was a guy you mentioned on draft night, him going into the second round. You looked at him in college and even throughout last year, and you thought, wow, this guy could be their next foundational pass rusher. I think one of the reasons they traded Matt Judon is, you know, besides the contract stuff and the temper tantrum on the field, is they thought Keon White could take a lot of that role, right? Like, he could make up for a lot of that production, and it just, to this point, it hasn't happened.
I think some of these guys are affected by the noise, and those that are affected by the noise, they sometimes say you see the character of a person when things look the worst. And for a lot of guys, let's just call for this entire team. It's not as good as it was last year, almost the same, but still worse in terms of record, because Parcells says your record says who you are. So right now the record says you're worse than you were last year. So this is the worst that some guys have ever seen in their careers. And now you're starting to see what happens. This is the mix of social media where you feel like, okay, I'm just going to say what I want to say. Now, people may, you know, congratulate that and celebrate that. At least these guys are being open and honest. But at the same time, if you've got one guy in and when you're saying, look, this whole room is behind the coach and we believe in the process, you know, the approach is the same. The results just unfortunately have been different. And then you have another guy who's just been here for 2 years. Or it was in his, he's not even finished 2 years. He says, well, I'm going to see where things are after a couple of weeks. Well, I would say, like, find those things out now. Like, if you don't want to be here, then just, like, you know, just say that you don't want to be here. You don't have to tell us in the media, but at least express those things, because I think Mayo's at that point where if you're one of these players that you feel like you can't contribute or you do not like what's going on here, and you're not a star, right? Like, you're not one of these people that people get on the phone and say, we'll give you a second round pick for. I don't know how hard I would fight for you to stay here. And that would be all inside of closed doors. Now, that may seep out in other ways, but if you're underperforming in a situation where we know that you could perform better, why not in any other job? Does that not mean that you go?
Like, so, just and go. I wonder if it's a side of the ball thing, because on Wenu being an offensive lineman, that's been the worst unit on the team all year. The offense has been bad for 2.5-ish, maybe 3 full seasons now at this point, whereas Keon White's on a unit that's used to being good. Even last year, they were a top 10 defense in most categories, so he's seen a greater fall off, not just maybe in his own expectations, but the production of the unit he's a part of than any of the guys on offense. So that probably leads to a little bit more frustration. And you look at guys defensively, like when we on this station talk to, say, Jonathan Jones, he's a vet. He's won multiple Super Bowls. He'll probably keep a lot of that stuff to the side or bottled up, whereas Keon White is a younger guy, probably just lets it out. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's multiple guys on defense feeling that level of frustration, because as you and I have talked about, I think for like a month and a half, 2 months now, the most disappointing unit on this team has not been the offense. It's been the defense, considering.
I think we were the first ones really kind of jumping out at that. Like, wait a minute. It's so easy to go after the offensive line and what the offense isn't doing and going after Alex Van Pelt. I was like, but hey, wait a minute. What about the guys who've actually known how to do these jobs here for at least several years, overly underperforming? And so here's where I'll play fairness to Keon White in these comments that he made to Karen Garigian. Is he making a statement about the new people that are in charge on that side of the ball? Right? Is he making comments about scheme? We've heard conversations about getting communicated plays sent in proper time. Are these things that maybe he's alluding to? 617-779-7937 is the number here at WEEI. It's also the text line. Could that, because sometimes you have to read between the lines of what guys are telling you, right? Like, if there's one thing as a player you've pretty much always been taught about is, like, you never lay your coaches out. Like, if you do, you're always going to be watched, and really your job opportunities moving forward become lesser and lesser because you're a person that's willing to breach the confidentiality of the room, right? Like,
yeah, and if
Antonio
you go back
Brown
to,
on Facebook in the locker room, it never changed. It went downhill from there.
If you go back to last year, too, most of the guys, like I remember a specific incident with Jabril Peppers saying, hey, no, the coaches are telling us where we need to be. They're putting us in the positions to succeed. We're not succeeding. Most of the guys on defense are like that. And the only instance that I can remember from last year where a defensive guy had some sort of complaint or strayed from the message was after the Chargers game last year, where Devon Godshaw came out and said, wow, we pretty much have to shut the other team out if we're going to have a chance to win. But that was more a complaint
about
the offense and their lack of scoring, whereas Keon White seems to be upset with not just the offense per se, but the entire team. And him, and to his credit, he talked about his own failings and things he needs to improve on first. I give him credit for that. He didn't just bitch about other people. But it was a lot more not say, oh, these guys can't score on the other side. It was, we're not playing well enough. We're not coaching well enough. It was more about the things he's directly involved in. And again, I do wonder if there's a side of the ball thing. Whereas on Onwenu's expectations probably were lower than Keon White's expectations. On Onwenu's a vet, but also he plays in the offensive line. He's used to not playing on a good unit for 2 years now, whereas Keon White came in last year. And again, the Patriots had a really bad season, but they had a really good defense, and Keon White was part of that, and he saw her up close what that looks like.
Maybe he's not thrilled of sometimes having to line up on the interior. Like, maybe you just want to rut when you want to edge rush. You just want to be on that outside.
That could be part of it.
Right, and when you get moved inside the interior of the line, that maybe you don't feel like, hey, you know, my bull rush is most effective coming off of an edge, right? And that's, you pretty much drafted him as an edge. And when you're putting, now granted, because Barmo's been, when he played two, three games this
something
year.
Like that. And the other thing, too, is it's one thing if they're lining you up inside or all over the place and you're winning a bunch of games and helping the team win. They're moving him all around and they've had him interior, edge, all this, and they're still losing, right? Like, so that adds to the frustration. And it's the same thing a player on offense, like, if you tell,
and if that's the frustration, I would understand where Keon White's coming from, because you feel like if I can't step into my best skill set that I feel like I can offer, then maybe, and you don't say it out loud, and that's what a young player, maybe that's where I'm going to assess my options after a couple of games, because maybe that's the conversation you're having. You're like, hey, what I do best is coming from the edges. You put me left edge, right edge, fine, but when you put me in that interior, you know, it's not working as much, and maybe that's why you haven't seen the growth of sacks coming, because you don't necessarily see Keon White get a lot of sacks coming in from the interior.
I feel like Keon White is one of those guys, and I felt this as soon as he was drafted and all through last year. He is the modern day pure example of a Bill Belichick guy, right? All business, doesn't care about the basketball hoop in the locker room and the frills and all that. He just wants to show up, play football, win, and not deal with anything else on the outside, which, again, when you're on those Super Bowl teams with the Patriots, it's great, and that's very easy to do. But now Bill is gone. You have somewhat of a different culture there with the head coach and the assistants, and you're still losing. And so that's where I can see Keon White maybe looking around saying, like, man, do I really fit in with some of this stuff that's going on? Like, for better or worse, like, do I really fit in with what some of these guys are doing over here? Do I really fit in with some guys that were smiling and joking after losing to the Dolphins in Miami last month? Is that really the guys I want to be around? Like, that's why I wonder, again, because as soon as he was drafted, I'm like, that's a Belichick guy, and he was all last year. maybe he has some of those thoughts in his mind, too.
So let me bring this conversation up about another Belichick guy that this could potentially be affecting. We'll do that next. KJ Lyons, in for Jones and Keefe. We'll get to your calls next. 617-779-7937, plus still to come. Playoff tree in the NFL, plus we've got to talk about ratings here as well. But right now it's time to trend with Joe Braver.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep. Graybar does that.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 864-SEASONS.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kim was pretty hard on himself. Kim was pretty hard on himself when we talked to him earlier this week, especially with regards to his play against the run. What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I think we all need to do a better job, not just pointing out Keon. We all need to do a better job, whether it's fundamentals, technique, and it's good. First steps starts with accountability, and I'll take that accountability, and the players have accountability. So not putting that just on Keon, all of us.
KJ Lyons in for Jones and Keefe on Patriots Friday here on WEEI, 617-779-7937. That is also the text line. We still have playoff tree to come. We'll talk with Justin Turpin next hour in Celtics. Plus, we'll get in some more guests and specials here for you today. John?
KJ, I got something on my mind after hearing that.
To get you
off track.
So we'll get to Dave in New Hampshire shortly.
Yeah. But Dave first, and then we can get to my thing.
Okay, so let's go to Dave, and I'll tell you how that 1-1 equals 2 with the comments from Derek Covington that you just heard.
Dave equals 12.
Yeah, 1 + 1 = 3, right? Hey, Dave, thanks so much for calling KJ and Lyons. Happy holiday season to you, my man.
Yep, you too. Thanks. I'm just curious how the Washington Commanders turned things around so quickly. I mean, last year they had a worse record than the Patriots. Or, they drafted one ahead of them. So what did they do that the Patriots didn't do?
Lose a lot of years.
No, I think so. I talked about this over the summer. Actually, I think I was on with Shine because we were debating, Okay. Hey, should the Patriots start Drake May right away? Should they wait on May? What should they do? And we looked at all the situations for rookie quarterbacks. And I would argue, and I'm just pulling up my notes now, Washington was arguably the best. So because last year they had the 27th ranked offensive line by PFF, but they brought in 3 new starters. They also had Terry McLaurin, who's a better playmaker than anyone on the Patriots. Cliff Kingsbury, much deeper track record as an offensive play caller, especially early in the season, than Alex Van Pelt. And Jaden Daniels himself, more ready to be a week one starter considering he started 55 games in college. So it's a great question by the caller. I think Washington is, once Dan Snyder sold the team, they were in a much better situation for a rookie quarterback. And I would even argue their defense, while not as talented as the Patriots, has enough talent that can kind of keep them in games, and they can score over 30 points. I mean, they just beat the Eagles 36-33, whereas the Patriots have not scored over 30 yet this year.
Well, here's the thing with why Washington's turned it around right away is because of the quarterback. Just look at the terms of offensive ranking points going back to 2018, 29th, 32nd, 25th, 23rd, 24th. Last year, they were 25th in offensive points. This year, they're 4th. So, there's nothing gradual that happened with them.
Brought in Austin Eckler, too.
Well, yeah.
So, and I know really, that's not the same, Kidge. I'm just
saying
they've
done
did
overnight.
Add.
I think the Patriots possibly have that opportunity to do that next year just because Jaden Daniels walks into a situation where all the tools are right there right away.
Yeah, May is going to be good, but I still think we would draft Jaden Daniels over Drake May.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
I felt the same way at the draft. And I think like both things can be true. Like, I think they're both going to have really good careers and be good players. I would have taken Daniels over May if I had had the choice, but I'm very happy that they took May. I'd take them both over Caleb Williams, by the way.
It literally came down to the to Washington not starting Jacoby Brissett against the Cowboys in that final game, and they played Sam Howell to ensure that they got that loss last year.
It is a Washington team that beat the Patriots last year, too, just for context. I know it was a close game, but...
Right. So, again, you know, you go... Literally, if you're in the 20s and 30s for a 6-7 year period, and then you suddenly you're at fourth, it's what's happening now. So...
Yeah, and I would also add, too, like, and this isn't a shot at Gerard Mayo thing, but Dan Quinn's a head coach that's been to a Super Bowl. And I know it's 28-3 and they blew it, but they got there. So they have a more experienced head coach, a more experienced or at least a higher level of offensive coordinator. Like, I think that matters kind of in all this as well.
Well, the other part of it is Washington really hasn't had any stability at coach that you've seen here, right? We're talking about
not since Mike Shanahan left, right?
Right, there. And even Shanahan was just a couple of years. You know, it had Joe Gibbs had come back out of retirement in the early 2000s. So, you know,
you shake Belichick's hand in 07 after the Patriots beat him 52-7. I didn't
the younger
you.
Gruden. Which is, I don't want to say the
Gruden.
Wrong. Jay Gruden was the, you know, Jay Gruden was
but
there.
But even that was a fiasco. Like, remember there was those things where him and the running back were both, like, competing over the same girl? Do you remember that story? That was a whole thing.
I didn't follow that. Then you had the RG3, Kirk Cousins situation there. So there was a lot of moving pieces there. They had no quarterback for years. I mean, Rex Grossman at one point was their signal caller, and it was just one of the. It was one of the. That's when I lived in.
It's
DC
funny though that guy sell a bad owner sells the team, and all of a sudden they become pretty good. Makes you think like if the Jets got new ownership, maybe they'd be pretty good. Because that's the thing. Stuff when you're bad for 20 straight years, and the only thing in common is the owner. That you know that matters too.
Well, see, the Jets spend. It's just that they listen to the wrong people, right? Like. I mean, I don't mean to be funny. I think I'm an intelligent guy, but there's no way Mike Thomas is going to let me dictate what the sales department does here. There's like no way. And that's what you have with the Jets with Aaron Rodgers suddenly becoming the GM and de facto picking of coach. So, you know, it's all about knowing your role.
So,
all right. I
wanted to get to because we talked in the first segment about Keon White and maybe being frustrated more so than Mike Onwenu because he's on a side of the ball that the expectations were higher. They were better last year. And you and I talked about this, I feel like it was in September or October, when the Patriots, remember that week 2-7 stretch you kept hammering about? That was a tough one. There's a handful of guys here in New England that are left over from Super Bowl teams. David Andrews, Jonathan Jones, Dietrich Wise. They know what it's supposed to look like. And what I mean by they know what a good operation looks like. They know what a Super Bowl caliber team looks like. Even a playoff team looks like. Even the guys that were here from 2021, a team that, made the playoffs, got blown out in Buffalo, but you were a playoff team. So there's a handful of guys that know what a high-level operation is supposed to look like. And I wonder if Keon White, despite being a young player, is only in his second year, kind of has those same expectations in that he looks at this and says, I don't think this is what it's supposed to look like. And what I want to know and what I'm looking for this offseason, does Jonathan Jones stick around? Does Dietrich Wise stick around? I know David Andrews probably will. But do some of the – because I think if those guys stick around, maybe it's a signal that, hey, we believe in these guys. They're on the right track. But if those guys leave or those guys don't think this is on the right track, and there's, again, only a handful of guys that know what it's supposed to look like, I'd add Mike Pellegrino and Brian Belichick as position coaches as well. But if those guys don't believe in it, then if you're Drake May, if you're Christian Gonzalez, if you're Christian Barmore,
well,
do you start to look around and say,
think?
Are we on the right track here?
Well, here's the other part, and this is the guarantee in the NFL. Every single franchise is going to have a bad run.
Sure.
Now, the only thing that has changed that whole paradigm of the NFL is that the Patriots didn't have that for 20 years. So if your team that's had that for 20 years the organization has done it right, right? There's no question that the organization knows how to do it right. It's just that it's your time for when the Reaper comes around. If you think that something great is going to last forever, that doesn't happen in life. Even if your life is great from day one, you're still going to die at some point. This is that death period. So the real question is how do some
nice
of these guys
on the radio?
Right. Well, okay. That's true. I mean,
you're right.
You know, how do you handle when change comes? Right. You kind of see this going on in real life when things suddenly get different. How do you respond? Do you stand in the face of adversity? We just talked about the Washington team. You literally had an out and out owner that was publicly a nuisance, right? Beyond just the team, it was just things that were going on that, as a player, like, wow, there are things that you can't even get done. I don't even know if you've seen this, if you've ever been to that stadium in D.C., they're probably going to get out of it because they literally have about a section of 400
Remember
seats.
Remember the railing fell on Jalen Hurts
Adrian Peterson tore up his knee on a bad field there. It's at a RG3 with the same thing. So you had an owner who didn't even put a care into the product that could potentially injure or end your career. That's how much he didn't care. You don't have that with the Patriots. You just have a bad streak that's going on. Like, would you rather be where Buffalo is right now or have gone through everything Buffalo has gone through over the last 20 years?
Which one would you take? Buffalo is right now. But
I would rather have the 20 years that we've had because Buffalo, this shining light could only last for three more years.
Buffalo, what they went through. I'll take
Buffalo. Right. Well, I'm just. Yeah. Would you rather be Buffalo over the last 25 years or the Patriots over the last 25
Patriots,
years?
Obviously, yeah.
My
overall point is there are guys here that know what it's supposed to look like and know what a high-level operation is. So if those guys have, like Mike Onwenu yesterday with us, I mean, he played for Belichick for 4 years, made the playoffs once. He at least has an idea of.
During the interview.
This is what an operation maybe is supposed to look like, and he seems satisfied with the coaching staff and the direction that they're trying to go, whereas Keon White doesn't seem to feel this way. And we've seen, how does Jonathan Jones feel about this? How does David Andrews really feel about this? Dietrich, like these, again, these are guys that know what it's supposed to look like. There aren't a lot of those guys, but they know what it's supposed to look like. And so for Keon White to come out and say this, that's why I take notice, because I think he's one of those guys that, even though he wasn't on the Super Bowl teams, he has that similar mentality to guys on those teams.
Well, if you're implying that, will these guys these veterans start to look to go to other places, I wouldn't say that would be an indice of the culture. It just could be an indice of, hey, I recognize that this is a rebuild going on, and there may be a contender out there that wants to use my skills, and I can get back to that and maybe pay me more because of my championship pedigree. So that I would say, like, maybe not so much in terms of would you hear anything said. But I will give you this. I do think there are some guys who miss Belichick because Belichick took that chance on him. So Keenan White, I
and
think,
also
falls
the
into
defense the was better with him, right? Well, like, so they probably look
well,
at that.
No, but
too.
I'm just let's just go to the individuals, right? Because Keenan White, his name came up in that press conference that Derek Covington had to say, this isn't just the Keon, but this is an all of us thing, and I take the responsibility. And the 1+1=3 may be why you get the comments from Keenan White to Karen Garigian. So that's the other part, is maybe because you hear the press mentioning you by name, it may have you feel a certain way, where with Belichick, man, you weren't hearing anybody's name. You were barely getting a full sentence. And I wonder if Ramondre Stevenson falls into a similar category where Belichick took the chance on him, gave him runs, gave him extensive runs early, disciplined him early with the fumbles. The fumbles then disappeared.
Remember, Stevenson fell in that draft because of the marijuana stuff. And they
right.
still took him.
So here's another guy that's fallen in the draft and is given high level of responsibility, is given what would some would seem as harsh discipline early on, but discipline that helped him get him to the contract that he's at. But now you're seeing the old problems show up again, and the person who used to be here isn't here, right? Remember when we talked about when he was benched, but he was only benched for like a series? You're like, well, that's not really a benching. That's just
in the Miami game. And then he came in and ran for the 30-yard touchdown or whatever it was. Yeah.
Right. Where, you know, with Belichick, it's like, you're an inactive today. You know, like, that's you're deactivated for this Sunday. That, and maybe that's some of the heavy hand that might be missed. That's why you're not seeing the performance on the field. So I do think there are some guys who probably are affected by the heavier hand that Belichick laid down at historically, because that's the operations, right? If it wins, it works, right? And so, and that's the situation with Belichick. And now it's not winning, and some are wondering, like, does this work? And I think,
well, and I think part of it too is, right, like, so you get rid of the guy that's the hard ass, the big bad wolf in Belichick, and you're not better, right, the next year. Your quarterback's better, sure, your offense is a little bit better, but as a team, you're not better. So maybe there might be some guys in that room that look around and be like, man, we're not, they fired him and we're not better.
But
like,
here's what's crazy. Let's say they win the last two games of the season, kind of go on a similar December run.
Technically, they would be better.
Right. So that's what's crazy. So if they were a one in everything team, you would say, oh gosh, like what's, and the one win was the first win of the season. I mean, just the malaise that would be. I mean, it's bad now, but can you imagine if the only win this season was the first one of the season?
I think Drake May has done a really good job as a young leader, because he's in a tough spot because he's still a rookie, but he's the future of the franchise and he's the starting quarterback. So he is a leader, but he's still a rookie. And I think he's done a really good job balancing that between being a leader, but also understanding, hey, I'm a rookie. I can't go over the top.
But he has the room to do it, though, with this staff versus with Belichick.
And I don't know if any of this affects him yet. But if he looks around and he says, well, Keon White doesn't think this is up to the standard of before, and then if some of those veterans don't want to stick around and they leave, does he start to look around and say, because he doesn't know any better, right? This is his rookie year, first ever NFL head coach, coaching staff, NFL teammates. He has no idea of what the difference really looks like. If there's guys that know the difference and he gets a sense that they don't believe, does he over time start to get frustrated? Like, I'm not saying tomorrow, but does he over the course of the next 6 months, the next 12 months, the next 18 months, if they don't get better, does he start to look at some of those guys who are frustrated and get frustrated himself?
Well, here's what's crazy. He kind of comes from a college environment where they didn't win all the time. So he kind of can kind of understand where, hey, you have this expectation that's probably wasn't managed as well in college, but has to be managed at its highest level here at the pros, right? That's the whole any given Sunday. You can lose to the Titans, even if you're better on paper, but you could also go up 14-0 on a Buffalo
as
team.
As Urban Meyer said, it's like playing Bama every week. One season with the Jaguars. I mean, but it's a fair, like, I guess the transition of it is a good point.
Right. So you're playing every week in the NFL, you're probably playing the best player from every high school in the country, right? Like, every guy that's on this field is probably the best person that ever played at their high school, unless you start getting into some of the high schools like down in Miami. But the point being is, everybody's great. Nobody, this is the profession. There's no 20 hours a week of practice and then trying to get out there on a Saturday and do it for the old college try. These are the guys that are working out in deserts in free time for 4 hours a day, twice a day. So there are guys who are going to be in the locker room and say, if these guys are the ones that are willing to quit at this level, then maybe these aren't the guys you necessarily want to ride with when things are great, right?
So yeah, but if there's a guy, and I'm just using his name, I'm not saying he said this, but like, if Jonathan Jones said, like, this isn't good enough and this isn't the standard, I'm going to believe that guy. You know what I mean? Like, Keon White's a little bit of a different case because it's only his second year.
But if that's in saying he says that, let's just say he says that and he leaves, right? But he may leave not saying that. He may leave because he recognizes it's a rebuild. If you're a veteran who's won a Super Bowl and you're seeing that a team is going through a rebuild, you might say, hey, every team wants to get to a championship next year. But if you know that this roster is not construed that way, and that's another question in terms of Elliott Wolf more so than the coaching, then you're like, okay, well, If the Chargers call and want me to come and play, okay, at least I know they're a consistent playoff team. They have things in place. There are very little holes. I won't be a dependency, but I would be part of a puzzle piece, where here in New England, I'm a dependency piece, and they're still rebuilding. So I can't be mad at a veteran who says, like, okay, look, I've been here for the championship. I see they're going through a rebuild. My contract is up. I should be able to say that I want to go. It doesn't necessarily mean I disagree with what's happening.
I agree with you on that point. I think, and that is a differentiator, right? What concerns me when it comes to these Keon White comments is this a one-off with Keon White, or do the vets who know what it's supposed to look like agree with him and say that not everything's on the same page and whatnot? Like, that's where, and we don't know that yet, well, but that's where my concern stems from.
If there's a way that I lie, it could be, did Keon White hear the questions about the defense and the run game with his name put in the middle of the question to Covington, set something in him that would say, well, you know, wait a minute, why is it my specific name in that question versus, and Covington carried it correctly. He said,
and
it's
to
not
White's
just
credit, the first thing he said was, I need to be better in the run game. I have to be better.
So then it's probably directed, it probably is in feelings of that question as you hear it more, as you hear it play in your mind, like, why was it my name? Why was it not just the defense and how they're handling the run? It's KJ and Lyons.
I think we all need to do a better job, not just pointing out Keon.
Yeah, 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. We've got Playoff Tree coming next. We're in for Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Happy holidays to you. I really don't know what day of the week it really is. I know it's Patriots Friday, so that's the giveaway. But, John, between trying to stay away from catching a cold for my child, and it feels like Joe Braverman might have caught it, I just don't know, like, what day of the week it is. Do you have plans? Have you started making plans for your New Year's Eve into New Year's Day? Or
yeah, I do have plans for those 2 days, but you're right about this week. It's like that kind of black hole of a week where you don't know what day it is. You don't know what time it is.
The football game is Saturday. The NFL game is on Saturday, so that's going to throw you off even more.
College bowl games every day, so it's like, yeah, you just, all you know is like, is the sun out or is the sun not out? And that's kind of all you know.
You know, the crazy thing is the ratings are in for the NFL Christmas game, because last night probably might have been the worst game. And I didn't even watch it. I just looked at it.
I watched part of it.
Really?
It was terrible.
You might be one of 10 people that have watched that game last night, because I don't know.
Not ideal.
It was, yeah. So the ratings are in for the NBA and the NFL. And so I think there's this misnomer that the NFL versus the NBA, that's not really what you have at play. And the reason why I say that is because Netflix can tell you how many subscribers, you know, actually chose to go to the game, where with the NBA games, these are approximations of people, right? So Netflix can look and say, this is how many people logged in, and there still may be more than the 24 million that watch. So for the first game, the Chiefs game for Netflix, it was 24.1 million. For the Ravens Houston game, it was 24.4 million. The high mark for all the Christmas games was when Beyonce performed. That was at 27 million. So you would say, hey, if one person is a person logs in to watch the Netflix Christmas game, there's probably at least one other person watching with them, right? So the estimations are probably somewhere above 65 million people watch the NFL games. Now, the NBA did very, very well, but keep in mind, these are all approximations, you don't know. So the Suns-Knicks game did a 4-9. The Celtics game, which I thought was the best of the afternoon games, did a 5-1. Then Dallas-Minnesota 4-3. Then the peak number for the entire day was during the Lakers-Warriors that peaked at an 8-3. And then the Denver-Phoenix game was a 3-8. So those are not horrible. I think they're up 50%. So don't buy into this, oh man, the NBA can't look. When you're talking about Netflix, you're talking about how many people are logging into the account. So what the NFL
and also are, too, with Netflix, and I'm not trying to call them liars, but it's not really measured in the same way like ABC is measured. So
well, it's a more truthful way because it's paid subscribers that get to log in. So those are 24 real subscribers that logged in. You just don't know how many other people logged in with them. With the NBA games, it's like, this is an approximation, we believe, based on some metrics that I have to be very careful discussing because it's all part of the same methodology that goes roundabout, right? So the NFL paid, I think, $150 million for 3 years of Christmas games. So let's just say, based on the 24 million that pay a base price of $9.95, minus 24 something a month. But let's just say the base price, they've made $268 million just off of the Christmas games this year. So it's paid for itself. So this could be, like, I really believe, you know, the big fear that people have is that the Super Bowl is going to be on a streaming service. And I think after yesterday's numbers, if you know that you have a Netflix account, I think the Super Bowl is going to end up on Netflix.
not right away, but I could see that in like 10 or 15 years.
Oh, less than that. Try ends up 4 years.
And I hate it so much. First of all, I hate sports on streaming services to begin with, especially if it's a national TV type game or if it's a in-market game, like when the Bruins are on Hulu only. Like, I think that sucks, right? So, and I think if you're doing a national game, like, okay, you could have a Netflix production, put it on an actual channel too, and get even more people watching.
Well, that's
watching,
what happened in Kansas City and Pittsburgh and right, Houston and Baltimore. Like, you got your local television station showed the game. You didn't have to have Netflix to watch it.
I don't like sports on streaming services in general, especially in market. And I know like the NHL on ESPN Plus is a little bit rare, but even the nights that like the Red Sox play Friday Night Baseball on Apple Plus only, like that sucks. Like, so someone has to buy a subscription to watch one game if they really wanted to see that game.
Or they can listen to the Sox right here on WBEI 93.7.
That's what they have to do.
Free as a bird here.
And they have to deal with us.
That's the
great thing
about
radio.
Then
they get to hear Joe Weil and Cooper Boardman on Red Sox.
Spend a penny to listen to the Sox game called. Yeah, I think that's where we are. And the you know, the NFL. Well, the NFL, they've been. So here's the thing. I don't even know if you remember this, John. At one point, the NFL said, like, if you didn't have your seats filled for your stadium, you would get the local blackout.
The blackout. Yeah, Patriots used to be the kings of that.
Well, I've seen plenty of teams go through these are those bad seasons. And so what the NFL realized was, hey, there's more power in the person who's watching the game than there is the person who's at the game. So that's when everything changed. And if you're one of those that believes that there's just an evolution in anything you deal with, unless it's like a, you know, like a door, which doesn't evolve because it's dead wood, this is where you end up getting to. So the argument could be, hey, in wherever the Super Bowl, whoever's in the Super Bowl, say 4 or 5 years from now, everybody but those two local teams, let's say it's Baltimore and Philadelphia, those two markets would get the Super Bowl over the air for free. Everybody else in the country would pay. And that comes down to the ad, because think about it. I pay 24 something a month on Netflix to not see what, Joe? What am I not seeing? Commercials, right?
Yeah, the Super Bowl big thing is commercials.
Well, that's the other thing, and
same with
and
any live sporting event.
Well, the Christmas games told you right away these have commercials in them. So whether you pay, and that's the other thing, I think the consumer's going to have to understand at some point. It's always about getting you back to commerce. Commercial is just the derivative of the word commerce, and so if they can get you back to commerce. Like, look what people are going through with YouTube TV, right? But 4 years ago, man, it's the best thing to get on. Look how cheap it is. Bam, look what it is now. It's almost like the price of
and
just going to buy
cable. And I also think,
like,
there's a lot of people out there that either maybe they're not tech savvy and they can't get a streaming service going. Maybe they can't afford a streaming service. And then you're going to take the Super Bowl away from them. Like, I think that sucks.
They used to say that about cable TV.
It cuts into the, but even now, the Super Bowl's not on cable. So it cuts into.
I'm talking about in terms of user experience.
If you, like, taking the Super Bowl away from that, and you're going to lose a lot of international viewers, too. Because, look, there's plenty of people all over the world that say have Netflix or Prime, but there's also tens of millions, hundreds of millions that don't, that watch the Super Bowl on NBC or ABC or whatever. So I think that's a thing that maybe the NFL doesn't care right now. But if they ever had a Super Bowl on Prime or Netflix, I think they would find the numbers would be way down because they like to hype up those international viewership numbers for the Super Bowl. You hear it every year. Oh, we had 300 million people watch, 400 million people watch. Well, that's more than the whole population of the U.S., so you know they're depending a lot on international consumers. And I think that would be a crappy thing to do to a lot of fans, and I think it would also hurt their viewership levels across the globe.
Yeah, you know me. I'm not a person who agrees or disagrees. I understand. Over network broadcast television is part of the public trust, right? It's governed by the FCC, and it's, you would say, this is something of national interest. But then someone can argue, so is Lifetime at Christmas. Why is that not over free over-the-air broadcast? But the Super Bowl is of national interest. It is something that's truly and identifiably American. And it's also why I think the World Series is why the World Series, when you get there, is on over-the-air broadcast television, because it is part of the national interest. Gosh, I didn't know this would turn into Communications 400 class here.
No, but I think it's right in that it's probably trending in that direction. I just think it's the wrong thing to do. And your point on the World Series, one of the reasons I think the World Series ratings are up this year, it's, okay, L.A. and New York, that's a big part of it. But how about all the viewership in Asia that was interested in Ohtani and Yamamoto? Right, like that was a huge part of it. Does everyone in Asia have Netflix and Prime? Like, some countries don't even allow it in Asia. Some folks might not have it. And I think so. It's one of those things that sounds good. And for a Christmas Day thing, they did really well.
Will they be able to see bowl games in Botswana? That's what you want to really know, right?
Yes, the Champ Sports Bowl. Gotta be on
yeah, the Wasabi
it's
Bowl.
The Gator Bowl. Gotta be on
Wasabi
Prime.
And ginger along with the sushi.
Can't wait for the Fenway Bowl. How about tomorrow, right? So you got the Fenway Bowl at 11.
So let's not eat all of our
BC
lunch right
at
now.
Noon and wait, Patriots at 1.
Hold on. You're eating all the lunch
no,
right
you
now.
Just
because...
let me finish my one sentence. I was going to say
no,
it's a
because
nice
that's
schedule.
A whole segment. You're
I'm
trying to eat
one
your,
sentence.
John, you're the person. Like when a tray comes out, right? Do you eat more on the tray than before than what's offered up for the full meal? Like because you're like shoving hors d'oeuvres in, right? We'll talk about Wasabi Bowl and Belichick coming up. That's in minutes. Let's get to the text line 617-779-7937. Joe, what do you have?
Looking at the text from a 410, they're saying that I think if Mayo stays, you're going to have a lot of guys who want out because they know it's not supposed to look like this. Similar to what Keon White is saying.
Yeah, I don't
it's
think
something
it's
something I'm monitoring this offseason. Like, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but I'm monitoring that this offseason.
But if a lot of guys want to go, what are we talking about? A lot of guys who just won 10 games are leaving? Like, that's the other part of it. Like, if it's a bunch of winners that want to leave, that's something different. But if you're coming off of a 3 or 4 and everything season, one would probably say you probably need to adjust what the roster looks like. All right, one more, Joe, and then we'll get into playoff tree.
We'll go to a different 860 who has a sort of a different take on Jerod Mayo, saying Mayo has been in the room with the Patriots for 18 years. I think they completely forgot Mayo's time with the media and his show with Tommy Curran. So not exactly 18
yeah, he
years
worked
in the
Optum,
Patriots.
So
room.
He knows leadership. Look,
yeah, I do wonder if this is all a setup for Hard Knocks next year.
It's interesting too, because to the texter's point, yeah, he's been around. He was on a team that won a Super Bowl here, but only around here, what, 5 years as a coach before he took it? Like, that's such a different role. Like, it's what we talk about with Mike Vrabel. He was around the Patriots for many years. I'm sure he was influenced by Belichick, influenced by Brady, but he still went and coached at Ohio State, coached for the Houston Texans, coached at these different places before he became the Titans head coach. It's just such a different role.
But if ownership taps you on the shoulder and say, we want you to be our guy.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just saying it's a different role.
Yeah,
I think that's where I get to the texter's point. I get what they're saying. It's right. Just, I think, such a different role.
Yeah, I think if Jerod Mayo had to go somewhere else, then I think he would have gone somewhere else to coach. But I think if ownership comes to you and says, you're going to be our guy, I think you take that offer. I don't know anybody else who wouldn't, despite what anybody else may think on the outside and maybe even some people inside the building. If ownership is the one that is behind you, then that's who you, I mean, you never bite the hand that feeds you. That's what I've always learned. All right, still to come, we'll talk about the Wasabi Bowl. Will Belichick be giving a press conference and talking to the media while his old team is playing a football at the same time? But that's still to come. But right now, it's time for playoff tree.
That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Playoffs? Playoffs?
Can't wait. Can we let them off the hook? Can't wait.
Playoffs?
Son, I got to do better than this.
You kidding me? Playoffs?
All right, let's start with the NFC, John, where things are pretty much set in stone in terms of who's in the playoffs, but what's not set in stone is A, who's going to win the NFC North, B, who's going to make the Super Bowl in terms of the high probability. So your playoff teams are Philadelphia, Detroit, Minnesota, Green Bay, Washington. The Rams at 81% they're the odds-on favorite to win the NFC West. Tampa and Atlanta, this is the most fascinating story right now because obviously the loser is out, the winner is in. Do you believe the Falcons can maintain their lead even though they are favored? Tampa Bay is favored to make the playoffs more so than Atlanta.
So I like Tampa here because I look at their last two games and it's Carolina and New Orleans, which are two games Tampa should win. And Michael Penix, look, he just became the starter. Don't be surprised if he has a game that he throws 2 or 3 interceptions, which all young quarterbacks do.
But he didn't do it in game one.
Right, but they have Washington coming up. Like, that's a tough game on Sunday Night Football for them to overcome and win. So I like Tampa in this division.
All right, so to make the Super Bowl, Philadelphia 17%, Detroit 36%, Minnesota 13%, and Green Bay 17%. You know, John, I'm starting to come off a little bit of Detroit, and I say watch out for either Green Bay or Philadelphia to be the upset dog in the NFC. Am I wrong?
Can I give you Minnesota? Don't sleep on that. Look, I think the Detroit thing, and you know me, I picked Detroit to win the Super Bowl in August. I've been on them all year, but so many key injuries. It's not just one or two. They have like 20 guys on IR or something this year, including their best player in Aiden Hutchinson. So,
David Montgomery is also down too.
Right,
so
now
the question
he's
is,
down. Right.
Can Jamar Gibbs be an every down back when he has had to do that? And you still wait to see that. And you, with Minnesota, here's why I say I could see that, because defense carries in the playoffs. And if you're Minnesota, and if you know that, hey, most likely your games will be whatever game is going to decide whether you get to the NFC Championship or not is going to be a dome game. It could either be a home or away game. Like, Minnesota still has a chance to win the division.
Yeah.
And if they win the division and then get the bye, then Minnesota may actually be the most dangerous team, because Green Bay or Washington may mess things up for these other teams. It's actually fascinating.
And they got Brian Flores calling that defense in Minnesota.
All right, in the AFC, it's pretty set in stone. Kansas City, they're the number one seed. Buffalo's the two seed. Houston is at the four seed. Baltimore looking sitting right now in the four seed. Three seed. Houston would be the four seed. Pittsburgh is 100% to get into the playoffs. The Chargers at 92%. Denver at 75%. Outside chance are the Colts. This is fascinating.
Yeah, what Chiefs, I find interesting, too, is the Cincinnati Bengals element of this. Two games left, but one of them's against Denver. One of them's against Pittsburgh. Like, if they win both of those games and they're 9-8, including, obviously, a win over Denver, and they get and Denver loses one of their final, like, Cincinnati, as bad as they were the first 2 months of the year, they're sneaking with that final playoff spot.
But wouldn't their loss to the Patriots factor in, potentially,
well,
in terms of
what
an
would
AFC
happen,
loss?
So if Cincinnati wins out, they would be 9-8.
Right.
And if Denver loses their next two, which think about it, one of them's against Cincinnati, the other one's against the Chiefs. So they could lose both of those games. They'd be 9-8 since he would have the tiebreaker head to head over Denver.
Yeah, so they wouldn't have to go any further. Yeah, it'd be fascinating to see where that goes. The Chiefs, 33% to make the Super Bowl. Buffalo, 22%. But watch this. Baltimore, 25%. You know what those numbers say right there, John? That Baltimore is going to mess it up either for Buffalo or for Kansas City, but may not go themselves. Or they may be the ones that go to the Super Bowl. So this predictor looks like, in terms of its chances based at ESPN, that Baltimore may lose to Kansas City and not go to the Super Bowl, but could potentially beat Buffalo if they have to play them in what would be a 2-3 game. Isn't that crazy to think?
Yeah, and you think about Baltimore. They blew out the Bills. Probably the worst loss the Bills have had over the last couple of years was earlier this year to the Ravens, and they were a potential like length of a toenail away from maybe beating Kansas City in week one at the end. I know they would have gone for two, so we don't know how that would have worked out. But this Baltimore team, their defense isn't quite as good as last year, but that's a great team. I look at Baltimore and Buffalo, and I know it's probably stupid to pick against a Kansas City team that's 15-1.
Yeah.
But I think there's going to be a playoff game where either against Buffalo or Baltimore where they give up 30 points, and the Chiefs still haven't scored 30 points this year. I don't think they can get there with this group of offensive players.
All right, KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. That's Playoff Tree. Next, we'll discuss Bill Belichick's potential return to the area Saturday. And we've got Justin Turpin talking Celtics at 11:20. Thanks for hanging out on WEEI, and happy holidays to you.